government together, and I'd like to have a hearing on HCR 3, and that would mean Senator Rick Metzger. That's what that would mean.
That's what that would mean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26. Thanks so much for hearing House confirm Resolution 3, and I'll be very brief. I know Representative Smith had testimony on the House side, and I declined to invite them here so to expedite your schedule, but I appreciate your consideration. House concurrent Resolution 3 honors the 100th anniversary of Welch's. It seems like there's a lot of 100-year anniversaries this year. It was a magic time back when Theodore Roosevelt was starting the national park system, and as a result, a lot of small towns took hold in that year. February 21st is the 100th anniversary of Welch's. A week from tomorrow, the 18th, there's a celebration in Welch's and that 100-year anniversary. My post office box, 97067. And I think many of you have been there to play golf, either at the resort at the mountain or stayed in some of the places. Great community. It's their 100-year anniversary. I appreciate you expediting this so that the parchments could be made and delivered by Representative Smith and I next Friday for their celebration, and would urge your support.
That's great. Any discussion? I don't think this is a real complicated bill. I have to tell you that Sam Barlow's direct descendants wander this building now and then. There's a teacher that was awarded by, well, the Milken Foundation and so on, Jim Barlow, and he's a descendant of this group. Dragged me out to take a look at Barlow Trail and stuff like that. He's the guy that set up the mock presidential conventions at the Coliseum every 4 years. So that we're still benefiting from this legacy.
Well, it's interesting, Mr. Chair. The property that I live on, some of you have been there, was originally part of the Bowman's property, which was the golf course originally. And prior to that was part of the Arowana Church Camp, which is still there in Welch's. And in the big 1964 flood, the river changed course and divided Welch's at the Arowana Church Camp. And it was when that division of the river that created my property, which is an island between the old riverbed and the new riverbed. And so there was a lot of history there. When we actually first built there, there was three old lean-tos that were, you know, decrepit and beyond repair. There's still the remnants of there. Next time you're up, take a look. And those were the little shacks that the kids would come in the early 1900s, walk through the woods, and camp there on the property. So it's quite an old history. There's a lot of original log cabins there, and a nice little community. But thank you very much.
Well, I hope you not only take this resolution, but give them our regards as a body.
I will do that. Thank you very much.
Well, let's close the public hearing since there's no comment and open a work session.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd move the House Concurrent Resolution 3 be adopted and sent to the Senate floor. I don't know if I made that quite right.
I think you did use
the word adopt because Judith gave me that.
That's right.
That's right.
Hint. Senator Starr moves HCR 3 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Exactly. That's exactly what I said.
Any discussion? Will the clerk call the roll?
Senator George. Senator Starr. Aye. Senator Berger.
Aye.
Senator Walker.
Chair
Shields.
Aye. The concurrent resolution 3 is passed, and we close the work session. Senator Metzger, have fun with this. Now we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2255. Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2255 corrects a statutory reference relating to manufactured structure deed records. It declares an emergency and takes effect on passage. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. It passed the House with a 57 I vote to excused. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Legislative Council is here to talk about it. This is a fun bill. This is real entertaining, and it's just a thrilling bill to watch. Is that what we're going to be told?
Heavy stuff.
It's okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Shields, members. I'm Chuck Taylor from Legislative Council's office. House Bill 2255 is merely a technical correction. During the last session, we transferred all of the manufactured structure regulation from the Department of Motor Vehicles to the Building Codes Division, effective in this coming May. One of the changes that was made in that bill was to repeal ORS 308-253. And if you look on line 11 of the bill, you'll see that we accidentally left a reference to that statute in. And this is merely to replace that with the correct reference, which is in 446-736.
Any other comments you want to make about it? Is there anybody else that's testifying? Go ahead.
I don't think it really applies in essence, but I'd just still like to say that there could be a potential conflict of interest. I own a manufactured home.
Any other questions about this little bill? Any other discussion? Let's close the hearing and open a work session.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd move House Bill 2255 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved 2255 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? If not, I'm going to ask Gary to call the roll.
Senator George. Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Berger.
Aye.
Senator Walker. Chair Shields.
Aye. House Bill 2255 is passed at the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Is this the going to be the first House bills that are going to make it from one chamber to the other chamber on the floor?
I wouldn't be surprised if they were.
Imagine that. Legislative process in action.
Yeah. And this one is so exciting, I'm sure you'd like to carry it.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Great. We'll do that. And with that, I should close the work session on 2255 and open a hearing on 2263.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House Bill 2263 corrects a date in the landlord-tenant law related to the recording of a security interest for manufactured structures. Again, declares an emergency. Again, takes effect on passage. There's no revenue, no fiscal impact. Again, passed the House, 57 aye votes, 2 excused.
Okie dokie. Would you like to comment further? I guess you have to identify yourself again.
I think we have to go through that again. Chuck Taylor from Legislative Council. This is also the result of a problem in the transfer that we did last session. There was an 11th hour change in the operative date. We changed it from July 1st, 2004 to May 1st, 2005. And I overlooked making that correction in a couple of places in the landlord-tenant statutes. So this is just to correct that, hopefully before the error ever takes effect.
Okie doke. And there's an emergency clause, it looks like, tacked onto the end?
Correct, because the statute, the version that we are amending here, is the version of the statutes that will come into operation this coming May 1st. So by putting an emergency clause on there, we basically fix the defect before it ever has any substantive effect.
Right. And without it, you would, again, run into a time problem. Is there any discussion? Yes.
Mr. Chair, I would declare that I am the owner of a manufactured home in case of any potential conflict of interest.
It's good that you cover your base. Any further discussion? If not, let's close the hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2263.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Move House Bill 2263 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2263 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? If not, Gary, would you call the roll?
Senator George. Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Berger.
Aye.
Senator Walker. Chair
Shields. Aye. House Bill 2263 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'll just carry this one for fun.
Okay.
There might be something I can say about dates in there that would be fun to say. I do know that Senator George said he didn't know if he'd last till this afternoon, and apparently he hasn't. Both he and I went through the same crud at the same time. And it was the same day that Senator Gordley ended up in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
He was driving home that day and said, I shouldn't be driving because inner ear equilibrium and everything like that. All I can say is that it seems to me that...
Well, Mr. Chair, we're very glad to see you back today. Glad you're feeling better.
I spent most of the day not doing much except watching...
Very severe virus.
Yeah, I watched my last hearing on TV and interacted on the phone instead of walking the length of this building and stuff.
Right.
But it is fascinating, this... I mean, between the lobbyists and the citizens and the staff around here, this is a dangerous place to be. It's not healthy.
It's called the cruise ship capital.
I see.
For the record, which one is that's great to carry.
Oh, for the record, I should announce Senator Metzger is a carrier of House Joint Concurrent Resolution 3. Okay, I've done that. Now we're going to open a hearing on Senate Bill 155. Judith, can you begin our discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 155 authorizes the Secretary of State to assess state agencies for the costs of specific programs. We have a no revenue impact on the measure, but we do not have any fiscal statement. I do understand that the fiscal office is working on this, and they need more time, so we don't have that statement yet. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Looks like I've got a couple witnesses that would like to testify, well, both from the Secretary of State's office, so let's just have Roy and Jeff come up, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Turnbaugh, and I'm the state archivist. With me today is Jeff Morgan, who's director of the Secretary's Business Services Division as well. In brief, Senate Bill 155 takes the Archives Division out of the Central Government Service Charge and replaces its funding with an assessment directed at all funds. This accomplishes several things. First of all, it enables us to assess federal funds. Central Government Service Charge cannot do this because it also funds the Legislative Assembly and the Governor's Office. At least 23 other states allocate indirect costs of their Archives and Records program to federal funds, and I believe that it's time that Oregon did as well. It eases the demand on the general fund. The Central Government Service Charge is heavily subsidized by the general fund, and it corrects the effect that the Archives Division's disproportionately high fixed costs, in particular rent, have in times of austerity. Our rent is approximately $1.3 million for the biennium. When we have to reduce our expenditures, that effectively doubles the impact of cuts against program areas. So, in brief, I don't think the Central Government Service Charge has ever been a good fit for the Archives Division. Senate Bill 155 remedies this and provides the Archives with a more appropriate funding base.
Other questions here? Do we all understand this bill to our satisfaction? I'm always kind of confused when people talk about rent around here. Mm-hmm. We own so many buildings. What's it mean when you're saying you're paying rent? Where are you paying this rent?
Mr. Chair, We pay uniform rent on the archives building, excuse me, to the Department of Administrative Services, which is the owner of the building.
The department builds it, and so the state assesses the state rent.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Do you have the ability to, in the budget process, just do this on a biennial basis as opposed to having the opportunity to have this as part of your ongoing program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I'm... I'm having a little bit of a difficult time understanding why the issue of federal funds applies only if this bill is passed and you don't have access to those under the current process, and why that couldn't be accomplished in the biennial budget process.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, the archives is 100% funded by this central government service charge that was put into statute in 1967-1969. That charge also funds a large part of the Legislative Assembly and the Governor's Office. The federal government does not allow the state legislatures or governors to assess federal funds for their support because we're embedded in this.
So it's a commingling.
Mm-hmm. I just don't know how you would be able to separate those threads effectively. Does that answer?
That helps, I guess.
Are there other questions? On your sheet here, the first bullet, I suppose, is the most important, right, to you?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I think that's probably the most significant.
I guess it's a dumb question, but you both assess and access federal funds by this, right, that you can't access now.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
I was just getting a little hung up around that word.
Yeah.
Which word is the more appropriate? I mean, apparently they'd both be appropriate words, but isn't it true? I don't know quite the process of the state ever assessing the federal government, the big guys, for anything. You know what I'm saying? But it's just that you bill them for stuff and they pay you. Is that the idea?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there are two ways, as I understand it, that states can touch federal funds. One is to give the federal government and agency a direct bill for services. Mm-hmm. The other way is to negotiate an indirect cost allocation agreement with the federal government and then use a formula to assess those funds.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
If we pass this bill, the Archives Division is going to save money on rent. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, Senator, sir, no, it'd be wonderful if we did. Because the Archives Division is now 100% general fund, when the general fund is cut, because that big piece of our budget is rent, and we can't do anything about that, we have to take those cuts out of program areas. See, so we can't, they have almost like a double impact, if I'm making myself clear, because of the rent.
I understand.
When this happens, how much will the federal government actually be paying, or do you have any idea?
I'm going to ask Jeff, Mr. Chair.
For the record, Jeff Morgan with the Business Service Division. And Mr. Chair, we've come up with what we believe is a reasonable approach, and we're certainly open to recommendations as well. But what we looked at was the state's total budget for 03-05 and what the federal funds were, what the portion of those federal funds were, and that represents roughly 20% of the total state budget. So of our budget, $8.2 billion represents federal dollars. So what we felt was a reasonable approach was to make a portion on the state funds and states that were coming in to base the assessment on an FTE cost per agency, and for the federal funds, those agencies that represent the federal dollars and those percentages of the federal dollars on a prorated basis, we would assess the federal funds based on those percentages.
Okay.
And the amount, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you gave me the formula.
Yeah,
kinda.
I gave you the formula. The amount.
I want to see the $1.3 million become something less than that.
Yeah, it would be on the federal, would be what we've estimated on our formula, $650,000.
Would that reduce the state to like $500,000? Is that what you're saying?
The state side, the archives, it's roughly $3.2 million on the general fund assessment. The state side would be $2,500,000 roughly, and the federal assessment would be $650,000.
That's a way to get $600,000 out of the state that we haven't got before. That's where I would have started, and then I would have deleted. Go ahead. Senator Starr, I can tell there's a question there.
Well, this is $650,000 of federal funds that we otherwise wouldn't come in the door to the state, or you're using $650,000 of federal funds that are here already in the state that are dedicated to
that's a good
specific
question.
Programs, or is it new quote new money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, it's not new money.
It's not new money.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
So what this really does is take money away from other programs.
So it's just a different way.
Mr. Chair, it shifts money. It takes money from federal funds and puts money in general fund.
Mm-hmm. A quick question. How many other states did you say do it this way?
At least, Mr. Chair, at least 23 by my count. I've got another half dozen that I'm not sure about.
And do the others use this assessment the way we do it? So it's half and half, roughly?
Mr. Chair, I don't know what their formulas are. They all use an allocation of indirect costs.
Any thoughts about this little bill here?
Oh, I have lots of thoughts, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I have another question, though.
Go ahead.
What kind of records does the Archives Division keep? I'm thinking about if you're going to assess state agencies based on their FTE, it seems like some agencies maybe would generate more work for your department and other agencies less, and is it fair, quote-unquote fair, to assess every agency the same amount just based on the number of people that work there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, that's a good question. In addition to storing, housing, permanently valuable records of government at the archives, we provide records management services to all agencies. And we have found over time that the effort in providing those services to federally funded programs is disproportionately great, because the records that federally funded programs create are, in a word, extraordinarily complex, because they cover so many layers of government, from federal, state, down through county, municipal, and other local governments. So I guess a short answer to your question is we provide services to all agencies. Federally funded agencies have not been paying for those services.
Mr. Chair, I don't think you answered my question.
Oh.
the question is it fair to assess the same amount per FTE on every agency of state government, or does every agency of state government based on their FTE have the same require the same services? And the other question is why not just assess the fees on a service rendered basis?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, on what basis?
If they have a request for information, request for, you know, some archival information, based on those requests, develop a fee so that you're actually having the agency pay for the services that are rendered, that mm-hmm. if they're, you know, if Department of Human Services wants you to go and dig this up, then you do it, and here's the cost for the time that it took us to go dig this information up, rather than a flat fee per FTE for every agency across the board, when some agencies may not use your services as much as other agencies do. I guess that's the bottom line question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, every agency creates records, and in general, in proportion to the number of employees that they have. The bigger the agency, the more records that agency creates, and the bigger task it is for my staff to then go and try and schedule those records for retention and disposition.
Okay, that's fair. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not real clear. It says 20% of the budget comes from federal funds. Is that
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, 20% of the state's budget.
Right, yeah. Of the state's budget comes from federal funds. This, you know, on first blush sounds really good, but I'm wondering, it is a money shift. So I have to agree with you that it might not be a really good funding base where you are. I think that to look at a different funding base, I think, makes sense. But what is the shift? Where does the $650,000 come from now? I mean, you've got to move it from someplace. I know it comes out of federal funds, but can you be more specific than that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, right now it comes from the general fund.
Right.
And what we are proposing is that we replace that piece of general fund money with federal fund money.
Right. Okay. But it's not new money.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, it's not new money coming into the state.
Right.
No.
Okay.
I guess my question is kind of along Senator Verger's lines. That would be, if it's $650,000 of federal money, is that money that's coming out of a WIC program? Is it money that's coming out of a homeless program or a health program and the Department of Human Resources? Where is it coming from? And that question, I think, needs a little more analysis. Seems to almost be a ways and means discussion, which is kind of the notion that Senator Starr is driving at. So I'm going to hold this for now. We've gotten a little bit of information. You've got our attention. It's a problem potentially that needs to be solved. I'm not sure this is the solution or not, especially since we don't see where all the money comes from, goes to or comes from or whatever.
Right.
And you'd have to ask yourself, kind of in ways and means, I suppose, what the implication of this is, what programs are affected. Am I catching the drift of the committee at this point?
Yeah, very much so.
Okay. Well,
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Go ahead.
It is part of our ways and means presentation as a program option package. The reason that the bill is here is it would require statutes to be amended.
Okay.
So
what I want to do then is, and I'd like, if you want to, you can help facilitate this. I'd like to sit down with the Ways and Means people, the relevant people, and Judith, you can make sure this happens, and we'll find out just what Ways and Means is thinking. And this should kind of dovetail with what they're doing. Does that make sense?
It does. And Mr. Chair, I want to say that if there is a way that we can reduce this pull on the general fund, that's great. I don't want to appear right. that I'm not in favor of that, or that I think they're mentioned that they maybe aren't really a good fit for where they are. I have to kind of agree with that, too. So I think that my only question here is the shift of money and where it comes from before making a decision. That would be a tough one.
Yeah, in one sense, passing this doesn't mean anything mm-hmm. without the Ways and Means movement. So we may well pass it, knowing that Ways and Means has ultimate control over that, but I don't seem to have the committee in the position where we want to act on it today. We may bring it back for a work session next week or something like that, or the week after, depending on our schedule. I think that is where I'm going to leave it right now. Is that okay? Okay. So I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 155 and open hearing on Senate Bill 156. This is a hearing. And I have lots of people to go on this one.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 156 allows the Secretary of State to conduct financial and performance audits of school districts and education service districts. It directs that payment for the audits be made from the state school fund. We have not had any word from fiscal on this measure, but we do have, I wanted to alert you to a potential revenue impact statement that we have received from the Revenue Office. Thank you,
okay.
Chair.
I'm just going to go in the order that people signed up, and that would mean that Chuck Bennett gets first whack at this. Go ahead.
We do have the Secretary of State in the audience as well.
Well, come to think of it, I guess we'd better give Bill priority here.
I do have a question if this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
156 does not currently have a subsequent referral.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Bill. I saw you there, and then I forgot or something. I literally haven't had anything to eat since Tuesday. So my brain isn't working as well as it normally. Today is Thursday. Yes, it's been a while.
That's a day.
Are you really fasting?
No, I'm not fasting. I've been hit with the same crap that's hit.
Oh, got it. So you're just forced to not.
I'm just drinking my way through life at this point. And this is only water. Let me tell you. I've had my share, and I've had my share of Gatorade in the last 2 days too. And I don't care if it is on the record. Have at it, Bill.
Chair Shields and members of the committee, I hope you recover quickly from your current difficulties with your health care. But I really want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today about what I feel is, in fact, a very significant bill. With me this afternoon is Kathy Polino, who is the state auditor, and she will provide more details about the bill after I make some more general remarks about the bill. I think all of you know that I spent a lot of time in the last year talking with people all over the state, and no matter where I went, the issue of auditing K-12 schools came up, and people really connected with that idea, and they supported the idea, and basically they thought that the idea of helping schools spend tax money in the most efficient way possible was a very good idea. It really makes sense to be bringing our audit resources to K-12 schools. All of you know that K-12 education is one of, if not the biggest, one of the biggest budget items in the state budget. And unlike most of the rest of the state budget, the state does not audit how that money is spent.
So basic school support will be $5 billion, about. And there is no audit trail following that money from the state. So I want to be real clear here. It's not that we can't audit school districts. The Secretary of State is the chief auditor of state accounts and has the constitutional authority to audit school districts. That's not the issue. The issue is how we fund such work. That's really the issue. That's what we're talking about with this bill. Currently, if the audits division audits a school district, and we've done some audits of school districts, it sends a bill for its services to that school district. Senate Bill 156 provides a much more equitable funding mechanism to create less of a burden on individual school districts, and it will allow us to devote some of our audit resources to this very important area. The mechanism is really very similar to the one that we use to fund state agency audits. By assessing basic school support, we spread the cost equally across all school districts. And again, it's really common sense to do it this way. We all benefit from the findings, the audit findings, and all should pay their fair share to make sure that these audits are taking place. Now, let me be real clear here. What we're talking about is we're talking about performance audits, not financial audits. And the bill summary kind of creates a somewhat of a misimpression. What we're talking about here is performance audits. I think as you know, or as you certainly will be told soon, state law already mandates financial audits. Every school district has to do a financial audit every year. And local CPAs mostly do those financial audits. But financial audits only determine if you spent the money in a legal way. And they don't talk about whether you spent the money efficiently to achieve your goals. That's the job of performance audits. The performance audits we're talking about are not focused on outcomes in the classroom. There's already a whole lot of other programs that look at that issue and spend a lot of time and do a lot of testing to try to look at outcomes. We're not talking about outcomes in the classroom. These audits will develop best practices and identify opportunities for improvement in support services that schools provide outside the classroom. Transportation, food service, waste disposal, purchasing, facilities management. Those are the kinds of support services we're talking about. Now, in Oregon, we know that for every $1 our audits division spends on performance audits of state agencies, we can get $8 in savings. So we're very proud of the record we've been able to achieve with performance audits on state agencies. Spend a dollar, identify eight potential dollars in savings. Now, Florida does performance audits of their K-12 program, and they see very similar results with lots of identified savings in their K-12 audit program. As far as I'm concerned, there's every reason to believe that Oregon school districts can benefit in the same way from this kind of an audit program. Now, we've been working with the education community on this concept, and we're certainly aware that parts of the education community are not happy about our proposal, and I'm sure you'll hear from them soon. I'm going into what I guess I'd describe as a lion's den tomorrow. I'm going to go meet with 50 school superintendents from around the state who are here in Salem to talk about this. And the meeting was set up by my good friend Chuck Bennett and from COSA, And I really appreciate that opportunity, or at least I guess I appreciate that. I'm sure I appreciate it. Now, I wouldn't expect everyone in a school district to love this bill. Let me ask you to just stand back for a minute and imagine if I was here asking you for authority to audit state agencies. Probably behind me would be most of the directors of state agencies talking about why the Secretary of State shouldn't do that and how they had their own independent board and we've got different programs and we shouldn't have that happen. So it's not surprising that there are some people who are concerned about it. Do you think that the lottery would have invited us to review them a year ago when we found about $800,000 in what we identified as improperly spent money? Interesting question. I don't think so. I think the reality is when you're auditing, people are always concerned about. Well, yeah, they're nervous and they just sort of say, yeah, but not me. But let's be clear here. Oregon spends $5 billion on K-12 education. And I know many of us wish they spent more. But we ought to invest a tiny fraction of that $5 billion to know that we're spending the money wisely. Spending $1 to save $8 makes just as much sense for schools as it does for state agencies. And that's why I'm here before you today to talk about this issue. You see, the money we save outside the classroom can then be spent inside the classroom. If we're saving money on buses, we can use that money on books. In fact, when I talk to Oregonians about this, many people are a little surprised and maybe a little angry that we are not already doing this. So I think it's time to give schools the same help that we give state agencies and hold them accountable for their spending. And so I urge your support for Senate Bill 156. And thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Let me ask you a quick question. How is it that we got in this position? I mean, if you have always audited all the other state agencies, why is it that, what's the history behind us not doing the same with local school districts? Is it because the amount was so small when in pre-ballot measure 5 days and most of the money was local money rather than state money that you probably did historically a much more limited scope of auditing?
Right. We have done audits of the Department of Education, and we do those audits. But local school districts are just that. They're local school districts. They're local governments. They're not the state. The fact that those governments get about two-thirds of their money from the state today, and that only has been true for a very short period of time, as you know, with the implementation of Measure 5, etc. But the fact that those local governments get two-thirds of their money from the state is, I think, a compelling reason to extend the state audit function to those local government.
I might be wrong, but I think the percentage was 30% when I came into the legislature.
No, you're right. School fund, Mr. Chair, school funding used to be one-third, the simple terms, one-third the state, two-thirds local.
And now it's reversed.
It's now absolutely reversed.
Senator Verger.
Yes, Mr. Secretary, I want to ask you, though, it's in the media and very public that there's a lot of discussion about the ESDs.
Yes.
And it would seem to me that if you do an audit of performance measures, that could turn out to be the basis of saying they do good things.
Yes, absolutely.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be a negative at all.
Absolutely,
and,
correct.
And so while we're looking at the performance of these districts and what they and the services they provide, a lot of it is done just on kind of clouds because we don't have a lot of numbers, financial numbers we have, the numbers of children served we have, but performance measures we don't have. So I'm not sure that if you look at it in that way, that it wouldn't be a positive for some school districts.
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, no question audits can show you very clearly where performance is very exemplary, and audits can show you places where you could do better. And that's the point of an audit, is to really help. And frankly, I mean, the benefit of an audit is to give, I mean, how we approach auditing at the state level is to give the manager of that agency a really good roadmap to improve the efficient operation of the agency. It's not a gotcha game.
Right.
It's really not. And I would say, and Kathy can say this even more clearly than I do, but I would say that we feel that an audit has succeeded when the people who are managing the agency take the audit and use it as a roadmap. And when we're playing gotcha games in the media, which doesn't happen very often, it happened with, frankly, with the lottery, because the lottery said, we don't accept your audit at all, you don't understand the lottery, da 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 da. And we said, well, we think we do, and we did an analysis of it. And I'm very happy to say that the governor agreed with our analysis rather than the former director's. So there was a rather substantial management shakeup, and the woman who was managing the lottery, she's now moved, but Brenda Rockland had already implemented 22 of our 23 audit recommendations before she left. So that's, you know, it's like there's success there, but it's kind of like you don't feel a success when you have that level of sort of controversy and publicity.
I understand the gotcha game vis-a-vis the lottery and so on. Give us a more typical audit out there of what you would describe as a roadmap. It was very quiet, didn't make the newspapers, what was the result kind of thing.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Kathy Foligno, I'm the state auditor for the Secretary of State. Gosh, there's so many examples, but maybe to give you a couple, and they weren't a couple in the media, but I think they were very good audits that we did during our prison construction that we did a few years back. If you'll remember, in the kind of the early 90s, we went through a prison construction expansion period. And during that time, we did really a series of audits as the prisons were being built to kind of give some information back to the Department of Corrections. You know, what can we learn from the first prison and apply it to the next prison and apply it to the next prison? So when they went in and did their infrastructure planning, you know, the water and the sewer lines, we went in on that first project and looked at, you know, how well they worked at getting that stuff in place, and made some recommendations that they could then use on the next prison that they built, you know, to get those things up and running when they first started. Then going back to that prison, we went and looked at how they established their contract with their construction manager, general contractor, and looked at improvements that they could make and how they established the parameters in the contract, the bidding process, everything that it went through, and again, that they were able to apply that as they went on down the road. We looked at the types of the prison, the footprint that they were using for the prison, and looked at, you know, how much are we building? Is it really all that we need? How are we doing compared to what other states are built? You know, our costs were double that of what the average of other states were in looking at construction. So we were asking questions on why. Why are we building, you know, why is our prison so much more expensive to build than other states? And let's kind of dig in and find out what's going on.
What'd you find?
Well, we found that there were some legitimate reasons why we were a little bit more expensive. Our prison industry programs required some additional space that we had. But there were some things that, you know, we were really building. I guess at one of the legislative hearings, that we said that, you know, we are building Cadillacs when maybe we can get by with, you know, Ford Tauruses. So, but that resulted in some changes in the budgets that corrections were given, prison population forecasts, you know, when that three strikes and you're outlaw first went through, the population forecast went like this, but over time it adjusted. But we were looking at the building construction plans, and they weren't adjusting the number of beds to account for the change in population. So that was another audit that we did, is looked at, you know, well, are we making those changes in the process to accomplish it? So those are the kinds of things that, we can do with performance audits that can, you know, look at things like facility construction. You know, school, we're building schools all the time all throughout the state. We can learn from those, and we can apply. I think all school districts could learn, you know, even if we're not auditing a specific school district, we can find both best practices in what they're doing and then also opportunities for improvement that other school districts could learn from. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I guess the mechanics of this particular bill is to really change that funding mechanism so that that single school district isn't bearing the cost of an audit that they may not have anticipated at budget time.
Right.
And that cost and the benefits, since all we think all will benefit from it, it'll kind of account for that.
Senator Verger has a question.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Kathy, do you have the people on staff right now to do this if Senate Bill 156 were to pass?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, that's a great question. We do have a program option package that's really linked to this bill that would add 10 auditors to our staff to specifically do school district audits. However, one thing that I want to make clear is that it's important for this bill to go through whether or not we get those additional resources or not, because what it does do is it establishes that mechanism to pay for audits. So if we, maybe backing up just a little bit, you know, we currently have that constitutional authority to go out and do these audits right now. And to give you just an attorney general number, it's 8234, which clearly comes out and says that, yes, you do have the authority to audit school districts. But it also, in that opinion, says that we do need to bill school districts, specifically the ones that we're auditing, for the cost of those audits. And so what we're hoping to do with this bill is to kind of provide that funding mechanism so that when, let's say, one of the recent things that happened to us is we had a request from Salem-Keizer School District to come in and look at their contracting practices. That wasn't an anticipated cost that they had in their budget, but, you know, obviously some issues arose and some concerns by the community came up during that, and they wanted an independent review to come in and look at that process. If this bill had passed and if this funding mechanism was in place, we would have been able to go in and do a contracting audit, looking at their practices, give them some feedback on what they're doing, and, you know, we think everybody could kind of benefit. I think other school districts were looking at what's happening at Salem-Keizer. But the cost of that would have been billed as an administrative cost to the state school fund as opposed to a bill being sent directly to the school district. And just maybe anticipating your next question, what happens then in our budget process, since we're using our existing resources to conduct that work, the bill would go to the state school fund, but then our assessments and our bills to all other state agencies would go down in a like amount. So, you know, if it was a $50,000 bill that was charged for this particular audit, our assessments to Department of Human Services, Department of Corrections would all go down by $50,000. So there's a net no fiscal impact because we're using existing resources to do this work. But it's just not a burden that's being placed on the school district.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. One more question. Have you ever audited the biggest school district in the state?
Mr. Chair, we have not. Funny you ask that, because they have just hired an internal auditor who came from our office, and he's now working for Portland Public Schools. They have had private firms come in and do performance audits.
Obviously.
Yes.
Have they been performance audits? Like,
I know of at least one where it was a gigantic performance audit. I think it ended up being about that thick, that was done at Portland Public Schools.
Okay. But the Secretary of State's never done one?
No, we haven't.
And it can be pretty much an in-house document that doesn't get shared with the public? Or is it required that it be shared? When an audit is done, is it always required that it's shared?
Mr. Chair, those would be public records.
Okay. Okay. What have you learned by looking at some of those public records?
Mr. Chair, we learned there's a lot of opportunities out there for performance audits. We think that there is some value that we can provide, and you know, we're confident that you know, we can provide some help to school districts, both on a requested basis or, you know, at our choosing.
Are you indicating then that most of these audits have been more just financial audits and not performance audits over the years?
Mr. Chair, all school districts do have financial audits. Not all school districts have had performance audits done.
Okay. Other questions? Hmm. If there's not any other questions, I'll let you go back.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. It's good to have you here, Mr. Secretary.
Pleasure, always.
Chuck Bennett, it's your turn.
John Marshall.
John Marshall can come up front, too, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I feel kind of guilty being up here with all this help being offered to us in opposition to Senate Bill 156, but I think when I run through my reasons, I hope you'll at least understand why we have some real concerns about the bill as written, that if you're going to take a look at it, this bill needs extraordinary amount of work to bring it in line, we think, with existing statutory requirements already existing on school districts. We do have already substantial auditing requirements on schools outlined in ORS Chapter 328. Although the bill doesn't say it, we certainly accept the Secretary of State's word. We hope the bill would eventually come into coincidence with it, that he is not interested in auditing, as it says here, accounts financial affairs. That, in fact, what this bill is about is performance audits. We don't need his help with financial audits. Those are being done annually. They're being done well, and as far as I can tell, that's not the issue the Secretary of State is raising. So presumably he's talking about financial audits or performance audits, and I guess that kind of brings us to the real crux of the matter. This really would ultimately represent a substantial change in existing law, and one that would result in an additional policy. We think you need to have additional policy discussions of Chapter 294, the local government budget law, in light of what he's proposing here. In fact, this change in the realignment of local decision-making that underpins local budget development would necessarily result, we think, in a complete realignment of the relationship between citizens, citizen committees, and locally elected school boards. Oregon schools already have performance auditing at the ground level. Each decision regarding local spending decisions, whether in the classroom, transportation of students, food services, or any other aspect of school operations or function, is being reviewed child by child, neighborhood by neighborhood, school by school, town by town, and district by district in the local government budgeting process. There's no doubt that a decision-making process like this, locally developed by locally elected and appointed public officials, can be second-guessed from Salem. As we all know, everything is a lot clearer from 30,000 feet. And I think this brings us to the fundamental problem with this bill. The Secretary of State is asking to do performance audits. Performance audits against what standard? If you're going to come in and take a look at these various functions of school district, we do know what the standards are for financial audits. That's clear in existing law. But what's missing from the bill is any statement regarding how the Secretary of State will determine that decisions made in a complicated, detailed local decision-making process can be judged. Will it be against the quality education model and its assumption that school districts should be funded at over $7 billion? Please. Or based on detailed analysis of the local budget process that resulted in the decision in the face of declining state funding? No doubt a performance audit of Portland Public Schools' use of buildings could result in a finding that there could be more efficient use of them if more were closed and students were bused out of their neighborhoods. But Portland took a close look at that issue and did its own performance audit with residents of the district and determined that the best way to serve children was to keep those neighborhood schools open. Other districts have looked at contracting out support service jobs like food service and transportation. Bottom line thinking, if that's the standard used by the Secretary of State or his successor, might have determined that districts should replace long-term employees who are often organized and working with benefit packages, including retirement and health insurance, and we could easily make a case that it's a lot less expensive to remove these employees in favor of contracted services. But the local district has, in many cases, has made a different decision. They're not being driven by those bottom line consideration. A Secretary of State's performance audit and the bully pulpit it is delivered from could trump locally determined decisions based on a range of values, including those of the community, its political process, and social and economic issues that come into play with the opinion, in this case, of a single politician. By the way, and I'm not trying to suggest that local decisions are always the best decisions. And by the way, that can be said about decisions made at the state level. Just look at the rush again underway this session to change speed limit laws around school campuses. But as you well know, that's why we have elections. And it doesn't take a political science degree to suggest that a local school board election is far more focused on local school-related values, issues, and spending than any of yours or even that of the Secretary of State. I do represent school managers, so I have to ask again that if you're going to hold them to standards as whimsical as so-called best practices, you should at a minimum set out what those standards are or what they will be based on. If by best practices you mean close neighborhood schools based solely on the bottom line, to close neighborhood schools based solely on bottom line issues, you and the Secretary of State should say so. If the Secretary of State or his successors would be empowered to conduct these high-profile, high-stakes audits of local transportation services based solely on economic efficiency, not on local road conditions, patron satisfaction, or the individual needs of a child whose safety is best serviced by a little personal service from the district or driver, then this bill really needs to spell that out. And finally, most audits are aimed at issues where there are the greatest risks. Risks in school districts, as in most agency audits, centers on expense accounts and check writing authority. As the Secretary of State told you, those issues are addressed in the annual audit. If there's a problem here, then the real need is to expand the annual audit requirements. But if the Secretary of State wants to take on issues involving education, he does have ample authority under existing law to review all school districts as he sees it. A good example, I brought along copies for if you want to take a look at them, but here are ESD contracts from July 1 to current to the current date. It's $208 million worth of contracts between the Department of Education and ESDs, wide open for review for performance that have not been reviewed. And just to help you recall, one of the issues in the Union Baker ESD issue was just this kind of contract readily available to the Secretary of State to audit. I think you've got to kind of take a look at this bill and look on page 2 to see what the real bottom line is. And I certainly, the Secretary of State is a dear old friend, and I know he is sincere about his desire to assist local districts. But ultimately, the bottom line question is, does the Secretary of State get to go in and take an unspecified amount of money out of the state school fund to conduct a review of local political, local budgeting decisions? And that's really the bottom line here issue in this bill. We hope Mr. Chairman, that as you work this bill, you will take a look at the issues we've raised, and you'll also review whether or not this bill, given its substantial impact or potential substantial impact on the state school fund, really does need a subsequent referral to Ways and Means so that it can be fit into the shortfall we already face in the state school fund. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chuck. Other questions? Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have is, apparently, according to what the Secretary gave us, and as a opinion number from the Attorney General's office, they have the authority to go in and do these things now. And what this bill is about is funding it. So everything that you said really doesn't pertain to this bill, because everything you said the Secretary of State already has authority to do. The question is, who does he send the bill to? Does he send the bill to the school district, your superintendents or your administrators, or does he send the bill to the Department of Education to be judged against, or not judged against, but to accrue against the state school fund? That's, to me, the question. I agree. I probably agree with most of what you said about the local versus state, but that's not what this bill's about.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, if that's not what this bill is about, then I would hope that you will remove section 1, sub 1, sub B, which gives him the authority to do it. For some reason, they decided that this bill needed this language in order to conduct the audits they're talking about. And certainly, if the Secretary of State thinks he has the authority to come in and do these performance audits and build the local districts, at least that language ought to come out. What I'm doing is responding to the bill handed to us. And the bill handed to us suggests the Secretary of State, despite the described, and I haven't looked at the Attorney General's opinion, and I didn't see a copy handed in, so I'll go take a look at it. But he at least assumed, or his attorneys assumed, or his bill drafters assumed, or his legislative counsel assumed this language was needed in order to give him that statutory authority. So that's why we spoke to him.
So you didn't answer my question.
I didn't. I missed it, huh?
No, the question is, would you rather have the bill sent to the state school fund, or would you rather have the bill sent to your school districts?
Right now, I'd like to have the law unchanged, so I guess if the Secretary of State has the authority to send it to the local school district and he has reason to go in and do those audits, he should do it.
Okay. And the local school district pay for it rather than spreading that cost across the state?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if the Secretary of State has the authority and he wants to go in and do that audit under his existing authority and wants to build that local school district because there is something that has prompted him to believe there's a substantial risk and that he has a reason to go in there and take a look at their books, he should build the local district. We'd rather not have this bill.
Okay. Other questions?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really believe in local control. I guess that my comment probably is there's a fair amount of emotion in your testimony. Sometimes that always sparks my interest. It goes back to the old thing, the hit dog barks, so don't bark too loud because you'll turn me the other way. I guess I took a little offense at your comment on the speed zone bill. Thank you. It came to us as a child safety bill, and it did have unintended consequences, which I'm sure is going to be corrected in this session. And it's true, none of us, whether it's a school board or whether it's a state legislature, are perfect, and we can certainly all accept that. I'm sure you heard my comment about a performance audit that actually can work in the favor. I'm a little concerned about some of the efforts that are moving forward outside of the education field, that people are not within your profession and that are making decisions without a lot of facts to base on. And so that would be one of the things that I would think would be crucial, that major, major decisions not be made without having to know what the performance is. I agree with you very much in that what is the standard? And I think that that's a very good thing to discuss about this bill, because I certainly think that we could have a debate about what that standard might be. So those are my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Chuck, I'm just wrestling with this whole thing of, you know, everybody that gets money from the state has to put up with the Secretary of State's audits, you know, and you guys get $5 billion. What? How do you respond to that?
Well, I Mr. Chairman, I think that the Secretary of State responded to it well. This is a separate unit of government. It is a local government. I found it a little, I guess, just kind of thinking back on the history of the state school fund. The Secretary of State's proposal verbally, it's not in the bill, but verbally, was that he would not be looking at the instruction side of the budgets. You remove the 60% of the state school fund associated with instruction. And if the issue is we've gone up so much in our share of the state budget, the Secretary of State is only proposing still to look at a percentage comparable to the percentage that existed in the past. So I found that discussion sort of interesting, but I'm not sure it arrived at the decision. I think ultimately, Mr. Chairman, we have a local government process here that receives its funding from the state. We are not a state agency. Certainly that could change over time and appears to, you know, there certainly are indications whether this is the right place to start. I don't know. Whether you should be looking at statewide collective bargaining as a better place to start your authority or some other place to begin looking at your authority as the state agent, you know, it may turning us into a state agency, but that is not what we are. That's not what the model is here. We have citizen groups. We have LSACs. We have citizen advisory groups. We have budget committee groups. And I guess if I sounded emotional, Senator, I apologize. I served as the chairman of the City of Salem's budget committee and served on that budget committee for a number of years, and you kind of sit here thinking about how people from a distance can second guess you. And it is a little frustrating when you think about it. As you know, the local budget process is a very difficult, very detailed, highly charged political process that does result in a series of both good and bad decisions, but compromises that work well in a community. And to have, and I think about, I'm sure it's the case in Coos Bay, it would have been the case here in Salem, to have people come in from way outside taking a look at those decisions and the compromises it took to put it together and say something's wrong with that in a bottom line sense is just, to me, is a foreign concept as an advocate for local government. So that's what kind of gets me thinking about this thing. Plus, I'm still getting over the cold that Senator Shields had. I still suffer a bit from that. So if I turn red, it's because I'm having a terrible time breathing. And anyway, I appreciate it. Thanks, Senator.
Thank you. Any other questions? John, I think we'll...
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. There's a couple points that I'd like to add in addition to those expressed by Mr. Bennett. This is not a new issue. We have had these discussions about the Secretary of State and his or her role relative to auditing school districts for several years. And in each of those discussions, we've come to a conclusion that we do believe the Secretary of State and their audits division and his audits division do have a role. There's an issue relating to, and the Secretary of State was right in terms of defining the very limited approach or scope that local financial audit takes. And those are the audits that we're required to have done annually. And the scope of that audit, as I understand it, is simply for the auditor to go in and look at the books of the school district and make sure that the books accurately reflect the school district's financial condition. So that scope is relatively limited. Several sessions ago, a bill passed that changed that scope. There was a concern in the Revenue Committee about the factors that school districts use to determine their share of the state school fund through the distribution formula. So a bill was passed that broadened the scope of that financial audit to require these licensed, certified, smart municipal auditors to take a look at those factors to assure that the numbers that school districts were submitting to the Department of Education were accurate, because that's on which was going to be based their share of the state school fund. In the discussions that we've had with the Secretary of State's office, they often refer to what they term, and this may be not be correct, but sort of risk areas. That is, areas of expenditure, receipt of funds that are the most at risk of mistakes, errors, I suppose on the far end of the spectrum, fraud, vouchering of expenses, use of company credit cards, etc. And we've suggested that if you're interested and can identify those areas that you believe in a school district are at greatest risk, let's sit down with the Audits Division and the Municipal Auditors and expand the scope of that annual financial audit to get at some of that. Because after all, the idea of an audit simply isn't paying an hourly wage to, or and travel and lodging, I suppose, to a state auditor to come into a school district. It's also going to require staff time at that school district to make sure that that auditor has the information they need to make that decision. Now, for a large school district, that may be the accounts payable person, or the accounts receivable person, or the payroll person, or the budget manager. In a small school district, that's going to be Betty Lou, the deputy clerk, who may spend a quarter of her time on the business services function, and she's going to have to devote a great deal of time to make sure that that auditor gets all the information they need. So that's an expense that I don't think is included in the amount that would be billed back to the Secretary of State. So we suggested options, some other options to the Secretary of State. If they believe that their expertise can create value for school districts, we've suggested to them, come up with an array of services. Describe what you mean by a performance audit. Describe the scope of that audit. Put a price on it. And we're convinced that if you were to offer those services to school districts and education service districts, there are many school districts that would probably take you up on it. The first and only school district audit conducted by the Secretary of State was done 5, 6, 7, maybe 10 years ago now in Klamath County. And there were allegations made in the community about misappropriation of funds, etc. The board wanted to get a good third-party look, and so they asked the Secretary of State to come in. And the school district paid for that audit. Oftentimes, a new superintendent will come to a school district, and he or she is interested in knowing whether or not the business office is running well, whether there could be organizational changes to create more efficiency in the school district. And in many cases, the local municipal auditor that has consistently done those financial audits may not have the expertise nor the staff to do that kind of broader look at functions and performance, if you will. And we believe that if the Secretary of State were to offer that array of services, school districts would take them up on. And we've even gone so far as to suggest that if they came up with that array of services, we'd help them market them to school districts. We've had those conversations. We thought that's where the discussion was left. We never heard anything again about their desire to proceed down that direction. The other concern, I think, is the whole issue of what is a performance audit. We know the scope of a financial audit. The an auditor other than the regular financial auditor, the Union Baker Education Service District, for example, came in and did what was called a forensic audit. Now, I'm no auditor, but it seems to me they were looking for something specific, so they came in with the idea of, based on allegations made by some community groups, I suppose, they came in looking for something specific. Then you get to a program audit, and that would seem to me to be an audit where you ask an audit firm to come in and look at a specific program, you know, how you're delivering your food service or transportation or your business services functions. When we get to a performance audit, as is stated in the bill, without definition, we're not sure what that means. And I think the concern that Mr. Bennett expressed is this outside auditor going to come in and second-guess some policy and, frankly, political decisions that have been made by this local body of elected officials? A good example I can think of, Senator Verger. Several years ago, there were a great deal of discussions between the Coos Bay and the North Bend School Board about whether they ought to create a single school district. Now, I'm sure if you came in from outside that community with your blinders on and your accountant's hat, you may look at that and say there's just makes absolutely no sense in terms of economic efficiency for these two school districts to exist side by side. I don't have to tell you what happened when word of even those discussions got out into those two communities. There was just no way that either Coos Bay nor North Bend wanted to create a single school district out of two school districts side by side. Now, that's a local decision made by local officials that they believe is in the best interest of their constituency and their community and the values expressed by those in that community. And there are a number of other decisions that local officials make that we're concerned that when it with performance not described, we don't think that's valuable for anybody or productive for this outside party to come in and second guess those decisions that those local citizens believe are good. Well, the final point, or the second to the last final point, Senator Shields, you asked the question about the Secretary of State audits state agencies, but they don't audit school districts. Many of you have watched the Ways and Means process where the agency heads come in with their graphs and charts and they lay out where the money in that agency goes and various programs and functions within that agency. And the Ways and Means process will often dictate to that agency, this is where we want you to spend your money, this is where we want the priorities for the next biennium to be. And so it's legitimate that you would at some point say, did you fulfill our directives? Did you allocate resources and conduct the programs and those functions the way that we expected you to when we allocated the money? So that's the state agency side. On the school district side, you appropriate money into a giant pot that through a statutory distribution formula goes out to 198 school districts. And you fairly clearly in statute laid out standards for those school districts to meet rather relative to student achievement and so forth. You have all kinds of guidelines and requirements about how the local decisions about how spending that money are made, how they have their annual financial audits, that they hold their meetings in open and they comply with public records, etc. So you have in effect said to those local school districts, we're going to determine the what. But we're going to leave it up to each of your 198 bodies of elected officials to determine the how, based on your own unique circumstances and needs in your local communities. And we think that is a great system. I mean, the legislature in its wisdom in complying with its constitutional duty to create a uniform and general system of common schools could have done anything. They could have done like Hawaii did and just have a statewide school system. But this legislature and your predecessors in their wisdom decided to do it the way they did. And so given the fact that you have decided to allow locally elected officials in 198 communities to make decisions that they believe are in the best interest of those communities, to make those decisions on their own, oftentimes there are decisions that you agree with, and oftentimes you see bills here to counter some of those decisions that you've agreed with. That's the structure we have, and we believe it works pretty darn well. So to getting back to the point of what is performance, how is are these performance audits going to interfere with the decisions of those locally elected officials? And finally, our concern with sort of the ability of, and based on the language in Senate Bill 156, of the Secretary of State to draw a blank check against the state school fund. And I see here in some of the testimony, unanticipated audit costs ranging from $5,000 to $125,000. Now, is that a performance audit of an entire school district where one school district is going to cost $5,000 and maybe a larger school district is going to cost $125,000? Is that based on the scope of this particular audit they're going to do? They're going to look at just one little narrow function, and that's going to cost $5,000. They're going to look at the whole ball of wax, and that's going to cost $125,000. So our concern is that this whole concept of performance isn't defined. It's a blank check. It tends to second-guess those local decisions, and there are other options that we're very willing to sit down with the Secretary of State's office and certainly the Department of Education, because we believe in this No Child Left Behind era with greater accountability. The Department of Education should have a role in helping the giving the Honors Division guidance about what to look for in a school district and help define exactly what the scope of these performance audits might be. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be pleased to respond to any questions.
John, as I listened earlier to Senator Verger, she kind of talked to Chuck a little bit about emotion-laden language, and I hear a lot of kind of words like blinders, going into a school district with blinders on, second-guessing the locals, writing a blank check, and so on. And I'm concerned that we've already arrived at a conclusion we hate it, you know, emotional conclusion, and that kind of gets in the way of continued discussion with the Secretary of State or with this committee or anybody. Have you and have the school districts and superintendents got so far down the road that they're not willing to discuss this anymore?
Senator Shields, certainly not. And in fact, I described to you, in fact, we had a very cordial discussion with the Secretary of State and the State Auditor yesterday. We've had, as I suggested, we've had this conversation before, and we've come up with what we believe are rational approaches to balance our interest as well as the state's interest and the State Auditor's interest.
Well, what I'm saying is I don't think a Secretary of State necessarily would go in any place with blinders on. You know what I'm saying? And the word rational that you just used is an interesting word, too. I mean, they might think what they're doing is very rational, and you would think what you're doing is rational. I want everybody to get on the same page in terms of the definitions of the way we're going to approach this thing, because when you get down to it, finally, some of my own leadership in the Senate has said, hey, there's $5 billion out there. Let's think about it a while at least. So I took my marching orders and said, yeah, we're going to have a hearing on this, and I want us to talk to one another and get past some of the emotional stuff and try to figure it out. Senator Verger.
Yes. The last thing in the world that I want is for anyone to go into the schools and make people feel like that they're not doing a great performance. We have overworked teachers, tired, who are trying to solve the whole society's problems that have been put on their backs. What I see in the debate, and I really believe that it's too loose, it's too open-ended. What is the audit? What are the standards? What is it going to be judged by? But maybe I'm just a born optimist in thinking that the performance standards that you're going to find in many, many schools, if not all, is going to exceed far greater than the public image of those performance standards. Consequently, that gives people like me a reason to say, look at this. This is the way that schools today are performing, and this gives us greater reason to realize that we have to look at the future of education in Oregon. So I guess I'm looking at it in quite a different way. I truly understand your concerns, and I would not want to say that I think you should just say, oh, well, that's fine, whatever the performance standards are going to be. No, no one would want that. If you have options and you have other ways of coming about a study or something that at the end of the day shows the kind of effort that our teachers and our schools are making, I want to see it, because it's something that is badly needed in this discussion.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments, Senator Stark? We still have a couple witnesses, and we're down to about 10 minutes. Well, obviously, we're going to continue this beyond today, but let me look around here. Perry
is it Anderson? Is that an N in the middle of there?
It's actually a K.
That's a K. So how do you pronounce that?
Ankerson.
Ankerson.
Or if you're Danish, Ankerson.
But we do it the other way.
thank you. I'm just going to give you a few minutes if that's okay, because we are kind of running up against our 5 o'clock deadline.
Thank you very much. I may only need a couple of minutes. Senator Shields and committee members, thank you very much for allowing me to speak. I'm a certified public accountant, an Oregon municipal auditor, representing the Oregon Society of CPAs, and yes, I have audited the biggest school district in the state. I'm in opposition to Senate Bill 156, as is the Oregon Society of CPAs, for a couple of rather technical reasons and then a couple of sort of broad reasons. So let me give you the couple technical reasons first. If you'll take a look on the first page, Section 1, 1B, it says the Secretary of State, as state auditor, shall have the accounts, financial affairs, and performance of school districts, educational services districts reviewed or audited as the Secretary of State considers advisable or necessary. You'll notice some parallelism with the first section that's right there. The first section that's up there is the authority that the Secretary of State has to audit state agencies, basically. Basically, this, I think, if any reasonable individual reads it, will say that the Secretary of State will be the authority for doing all financial and performance audits of school districts. And this is an area that's been discussed, we think, in about the last 5 legislative sessions, which basically would tell you that the legislature is going, by passing a bill such as this, say to all the school boards, you're not really competent to hire auditors to do your financial audits. Now, the Secretary of State sat here and I listened to him, said that this bill is about performance audits. If it is, I would suggest taking out references to financial and fiscal affairs in that, because that's what the private sector does, and school boards contract with other CPAs to do that work. Plus, also, it considers advisable and necessary. To me, that's kind of a blank check to deal with things. And as we was discussed earlier, the funding mechanism appears also to allow the Secretary of State to estimate what they're going to do and simply tell the legislature, and it comes out of the school fund. Now, that's about $1.3 million, if I understand, a presentation given by the Secretary of State several weeks ago, I believe in the Central Oregon somewhere. $1.3 million. My client, particularly Portland Public Schools, about 10% of everything that goes into the school pot goes to them. That costs them $130,000. They've already got a performance auditor on staff. They're spending probably, $80,000 or so a year would be my guess, fully loaded costs for that individual. So in any case, I think it, as the father of kids that have gone through Oregon schools, that keeping the money as much as we can into education is fine. I will say from my experience, and we audited my firm about 30 school districts in the state, that school districts over the several years have done a wonderful job in cutting and cutting and cutting. But let me give you several $100,000 of advice in terms of performance audits right here. 198 school districts. How about efficiency? Not very efficient. Political? Yes, it is. But it's not very efficient. You can go to the Hawaii model. I'm the result of the Hawaii model. The 180 degrees from the Hawaii model. I went to high school in Hawaii, but in a private school, because public schools weren't very good. So that's there. So to try to limit your time here, there's a couple other things I would like to say. But we're very willing to work with the Secretary of State's office, your committee, and any other interested parties in getting some of these things done, because performance audits can be very valuable. I will not dispute that at all. They can also be done by others other than the Secretary of State's office. The audit that was, I believe, Senator Shields, who referred to a number of years back, was done by a CPA firm, very large CPA firm on Portland Public Schools, and was very valuable and did result in several changes. And I think many of those changes did, in fact, have some bottom-line effect, and others had just good efficiency and instructional effect. So, again, Oregon Society of CPAs, myself, and the folks that are on our committee that work with these things offer to you any help that we can give you. We would like to see the educational system and the auditing system of school districts and educational service districts be the best that it can be. And that's our desire. Any questions that you had, I'd be more than pleased to respond.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I do want to try and get one more in, but you got a quick question.
One very quick question for clarification, Mr. Chairman. Did I understand you to say that your organization and you personally feel that this is a competition with the private sector? for the Secretary of State to be doing this service?
Senator Verdeer and Chair. Actually, no. That's not the issue. What I want to say, though, however, is in this section that's added here, where it does indicate shall have, it does put the Secretary of State into a position that I think any reasonable individual could read that and say, okay, Secretary of State is in charge of all school district audits. Now, they may choose to contract it out with the private sector. They may choose to do it themselves. That's all possible. But I think a reasonable reading of this language puts them in the driver's seat. And we have had that conversation in several previous legislative sessions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
While Lori is coming up, she's the last one on my list, and nobody else gets on today. I'm going to ask Kathy a question. If I can get a staff person to this Secretary of State's meeting with 50 superintendents, would that be okay? Can you contact my office and make sure that they know where and when this meeting is, how long it is, and so on? Get a hold of Sarah, if you could, okay? I would send Judith, but Judith is with her chairman of the Transportation Committee in Coos Bay tomorrow. I would be there myself, but I'm on the Environment and Land Use Committee, and I'll be in, where am I tomorrow?
Hood River.
Hood River tomorrow. That's right. We're in Hood River tomorrow. So the president of the Senate has managed to scatter us all over the place on Fridays, but I want to get somebody to your meeting, okay? Can you make sure that connection occurs? Thanks. Is Tom even here? He isn't here now. He must know I'm not doing him. Let's let Lori hold forth. Sorry,
thank you, Mr.
Sorry,
Chair.
Lori.
That's fine. Good evening, committee members, Mr. Chair, Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association, representing 43,000 members in K-12 as well as community colleges, here with qualified support for the bill, which is different from what you may have heard from us in the past. And there's a part of me that's tempted to say I agree with what everybody has said here today. Because there are pieces of truth in all of it. Our organization, however, believes that there is a public clamor for at least a perceived greater degree of accountability. I don't necessarily think the rap is always fair. I think most school districts do a fine job, both of fiscal management and performance issues. Mm-hmm. However, I know that the exception always seems to prove the rule in people's minds. I also think there have been a couple unfortunate experiences that tend to get a lot of publicity. So we have been working with the Secretary of State's office to express our concerns about a student-focused, thoughtful way to draw in this bill and scale it down in a way that we believe will satisfy the public's thirst for that accountability and that independent eye, as well as deploy those dollars where they should be deployed, where the public expects them to be deployed, where our members would like them to be deployed, and also avoids the problems of mission creep or of substituting unprofessional judgment for that of professionals. All those things you've heard here today, all of which I think are valid. The reason you heard a motion, I think, is because there are legitimate issues of trust and fear. And I'd just like to be kind of a peacemaker here in suggesting that neither one of the sides have the market cornered on truth. We think that there are ways to restructure this bill that will limit its scope, limit its expense, limit the definition of performance for the purpose of this exercise, and still provide some confidence to the public at large. We also support the notion of local control and recognize that locally elected school boards are locally accountable, both in terms of election and in terms of budget hearings and site councils and all of those players who give of their time as volunteers, just as in effect you all do, ought not have their decisions trumped and questioned and criticized. And so I'd just like to offer a little balance, kind of as the wrap-up person batting cleanup here, to say that if we can be made satisfied that the amendments that we're working on with the Secretary of State accomplish those goals, we would be able to support the bill, and we'd like you to consider it then.
Thank you for your comments and for the work that you've already done on some potential amendments, and I imagine some other people are working on the same from what I heard about today. Yes, Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I don't necessarily have a question for Ms. Wimmer, but I do have a comment.
Yeah.
It seems to me that we need to get the constitutional issues clarified. If Secretary of State has the constitutional authority to do this already, we need to make sure we understand what that is. And the bigger question is, does the Secretary of State have the constitutional authority to audit any entity that receives state dollars, including cities, counties, special districts? You know, those are pertinent questions.
Yes, they are.
And you know, it puts a lot of these other things, you know, are mute. You know, the Constitution trumps what's in the statute. We can write the statute however anybody wants, but if the Constitution gives them the carte blanche authority to go out and put the thumb on anybody that receives a state general fund dollar, I think we really need to have that. Those issues clarified crystal clear for us as we move forward.
Well, Judith has been talking to me about getting the Attorney General's opinion. Maybe we could have them, when they deliver it, give us a brief little primer on the constitutional questions that you've raised. They're on the record. Judith can make note of them and make the proper contact with the Attorney General's office.
Thank you.
Are there other questions? Any questions of worry?
I do appreciate the direction you're heading, and I appreciate the presence of any peacemakers that would like to join this little effort. With that, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 156. I don't see Tom Gallagher here, do I? We had one other bill to do, but it was his, and we'll just do it at another time. And with that, I'm going to close today's General Government Committee. Okay? Was he the one that was supposed to be here?